Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Welcome back to Radio EcoShock. We return to our interviews of citizen activists speaking out against the uncontrolled violation of their lands and lives. We're going to talk with Bob Arrington. Bob is a retired engineer living in Battlement Mesa. That's in Colorado, where up to 200 natural gas wells have been proposed in that one area alone. Bob is chair of the Energy Committee of the Western Colorado Congress. He testified before the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Bob champions the health impacts of oil and gas, has led local air monitoring efforts, and takes international media around the gas fields. Bob, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Well, it's my pleasure to join you.
In a press conference for the new report, Gone for Good, you had serious concerns about fracking in Colorado. Please go ahead and tell us about that.
The forum that I spoke in before was primarily concerned about the hydrology and the loss of waters in the injection process and the poisoning with dangerous chemicals. So we have several problems here with the fracking and the flow back that comes from the fracking and the air quality measures and the water quality measures and problems that are just seemingly endless. And in some cases, there's control measures done, but not in all cases. So basically on that hydrology issue, we had a problem and a solution and an action that I had talked about. Colorado is a headwater state, and all the water flows out of it. So any water that we maintain is through reservoir systems or anything like that, but we have downstream commitments, and those people are also wanting good quality water as it goes down there. And so the competition for the water in this state is heavy, and yet we have a reservoir that is a flood control reservoir south of Denver that is 2,700 acre feet, and the amount of water that is used in fracking could, in 2012 alone, drain that reservoir in 1.25 years. Here on the west slope, almost all the water goes into our Colorado River, with the southern part of the western slope going into the Rio Grande River as major rivers flowing out. On the eastern slope, we have the Platte River and the Arkansas as the major drainages going out. So the amount of water that's used is just tremendous. Like I said, it drained that Chatfield Reservoir. And with the horizontal drilling, the fracking water requirements are going up to 3 to 6 million gallons per well bore, as opposed to maybe a million used now. On the air quality, we have here in Battlement, we did talk our county commissioners into doing a health study for the effects. The end result was a McKinsey report that came out that said people were going to endure health effects at a half a mile away from the drilling under the present way they do things. This was also confirmed by a Theo Colburn study that not only confirmed the half a mile, but also confirmed some new chemicals that we hadn't seen before. But in this, as a solution, Colorado's got to step forward through their Colorado Oil and Gas Commission and tighten those regulations. Now, last year we did score a minor victory in the fact that we got a 500-foot setback put in, but by the same token, we had a ring of safety study that showed that 1,000-foot was more or less the minimum distance for damages. And if anything went on for 24 hours, such as a fire or incident, why, it could seriously damage property around. And our action has been to get the government and the governor and the COGCC to move forward on these and get the rules in place to make the operations far more safe.
First of all, let's talk about this 500-foot setback. I understand that some people in the states do not own the rights to what's under the ground. So that means that an oil or gas company could come right up to within 500 feet of somebody's house and just put in a fracking well?
Yes, that's correct.
And there's nothing you can do about it?
There's nothing you can do about it. Colorado is a split estate, as is most of the nation. So those mineral owners can get those rights. Now, the one thing that has happened is with the horizontal drilling, they can reach up to 2 miles or more in any direction out from the well pad. And slowly they're finding that it's more economical to set up once instead of moving the rig over and over again. Still, it hasn't taken effect. The distance was much less than 500 feet. It was 300 and 150, depending upon the circumstances involved. Now, the way the rule was written, of course, if a property owner agrees to them coming closer, they can even come closer than that 500 feet.
Well, that'd be some neighbor to have. It's noisy, it's dangerous, it's smelly. We can't see the methane or most of these volatile chemicals they're fracking with. I've seen video with special filters that show methane and other toxic gases just pouring out of these newly fracked wells, billowing out in clouds for as long as 2 weeks before they even cap it off and then leaking after that. What are the health impacts of breathing that stuff?
One of the big volatile chemicals that comes off is the BTEX group. And that's benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene. Those chemicals, the two benzenes are both carcinogens, and the xylene and toluene are both poisons. So it's a real mess, and those are the critical chemicals to watch coming off there. But they've got, I'd have to dig into the reports because the names get to be a mile long on some of the bad news chemicals. But in that TDEX report of Colburn's lists, what they found is an added thing. Now, Colorado has, and Garfield County has, scheduled a air quality monitoring setup. And the Colorado State University is coming in to perform that, and it'd be a 3-year study. However, of course, right now the drilling is in a slowdown because of the low price of gas across the nation. Then, too, the big oil rush up in North Dakota has taken quite a few of the rigs up that way. But the Niobrara on the eastern slope of Colorado has opened up oil there. So Weld County and the counties over there, they've had quite an air quality problem going on. It's the type of thing that NOAA got into the thing and seen these high concentrations of like benzene and whatnot, and they attributed it directly to the drilling programs going on there. As far as methane, the methane, as far as a human problem, it's not a toxic gas in any way. But what it does do, as they lose 6 to 12% in gathering and getting this stuff into pipelines, it adds to the global warming thing because methane is 20 times as powerful as CO2 as a greenhouse gas. And it can reside in the atmosphere anywhere from 10 to 20 years.
And have people in Colorado complained about developing strange illnesses that they might attribute to fracking?
Yes, and this has been a real problem because people go to their individual doctors. The doctors are not quite sure because they don't know which chemicals that these people may have been exposed to or what they've got around. So the treatment thing can be problematic. Colorado enacted a rule by which they would have to disclose to doctors when they put together with a drilling operation or somebody poisoned in that way and they come in. But the doctors had to sign a confidentiality waiver and couldn't share the information. And there's been such a hullabaloo about that why they relaxed the rule to say, well, we'll modify that you can share it with your other medical professionals. But it's been a real fight that way, and only now are the problems really coming to light because it's been denied, denied, denied by the industry.
Right, and people who do get sick, of course, they feel very isolated and it affects them financially. It's a very difficult problem to deal with. I'd like to get back to the water thing. I mean, Colorado, as you say, it's the beginning of a whole bunch of river systems. It's very important. I've seen photos from space that show that Colorado is generally drying out, probably due to climate change, but it also goes through regular natural cycles like that. Been tremendous fires in Colorado, and now we're removing this water. It sounds like a bad scene.
Well, yes, Colorado's experienced a heavy drought. Some of the peak temperature variations occurred in northeastern Colorado, and it went through the whole Midwest from Texas to Canada. It's been a real problem, and of course, what we've seen was horrific forest fires in the summer that we had, what was it, almost 300 homes or better wiped out last year from forest fires. And the Colorado, of course, would flow out there, but it does go dry from all the use that's put on it. And Colorado's bound by the Colorado River Compact to make sure that we don't hold back anything that would be allocated to somebody downstream. Now, the Rio Grande, it's another river that runs dry by the time it gets through Texas. So the Platte and the Arkansas do find their way to the Mississippi. However, on the Arkansas, Kansas had just a couple of years ago won a lawsuit by which Colorado was withholding too much water there and they had to release more. So we had to drain some of our reservoirs to get back some of that water to Kansas. And water is a major issue. And unfortunately, the state and the health departments have seen fit to put the allowable levels for some of the frack waters or produced waters from wells to be disposed of after minor treatment. As we found out in Pennsylvania, where they were experiencing more radioactive water coming out of there, the treatment facilities just weren't equipped to handle the radioactivity that they were dumping down in the rivers. They like to delineate produced water from their fracking flowback, but about 50%, somewhere close to 50% of their frack waters doesn't flow back immediately. It comes out over the life of the well. So these produced waters have heavy metals, arsenic, cadmium. They have radioactivity. They're a very heavy brine from the salts that are there. They're a mixture such that when they dump it on the ground someplace, it kills the vegetation.
Well, I thought all of that was being put back in deep injection wells, but you're saying some of it can actually make it into our river systems?
Yes, it can. And the deep injection wells is the worst of the worst of the brines. Sometimes here in Colorado, what they're doing is they're recycling it some for rework fracking or whatnot. And after it's been recycled once and then it comes out, they almost always have to take that and put it in the deep injection wells. Now, that water, once it goes into deep injection wells, it's gone for our lifetime unless somebody comes up with the technology to draw it back out and remove all those poisons and toxins and carcinogens from that water. Some processes like reverse osmosis and stuff could, but it would be cheaper not to use that water in the first place. Just as a minor note, they can frack with liquid natural gas itself. They can also use nitrogens, and there's a couple of other processes, but these are more expensive than the cheap water they can get.
Well, they're not really paying what that water costs. Bob Arrington, what drove you to become an activist and to speak out about this?
Well, as a retired person and getting involved in this and seeing the technology that is available that they still won't use and how slow they are in responding to that and our needs for the gas and stuff right now, I started getting interested as an engineer. I said, why aren't these problems being taken care of? So first off, you end up identifying the problems, and then once you see the magnitude of those problems, you say, wait a minute, this has got to slow down. This has got to stop until we are ready to do it right and responsibly. And of course, you know, bottom lines are the biggest driving force in any sharply run company. And unfortunately, those profit margins is what's causing our problems out there in the health and the contamination of the environment.
You've been listening to Bob Arrington. He's a retired engineer in Battlement Mesa, Colorado. He's the chair of the Energy Committee of the Western Colorado Congress. Bob, thank you for telling us what the big energy companies don't want to tell us.
All right, my pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Radio EcoShock, Fracked Lands and Fracked Lives. I'm Alex Smith, as our special continues. Beyond the old-time ranchers, humans have been living in the American Northwest for more than 10,000 years. Theodora Birdbear is a lifetime resident of the Fort Berthold Reservation. She serves on the board of directors for the Dakota Resource Council. Theodora, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Well, please go ahead and tell us what you think people need to know, what they aren't being told about this big oil and gas boom in North Dakota.
Yes. You know, the Missouri River is the major river in western North Dakota, and it's the source of drinking water for me, my family, and most of our tribal members on Fort Berthold. And that's in addition to the many communities up and down the Missouri River. Groundwater is a limited source in our arid, dry country in western North Dakota. And with billions of barrels of oil projected out here in the Bakken, the oil industry is looking for a source of fracking water. According to their own projections, they are just starting to frack and drill out here. There was a news article in one of the statewide newspapers this winter that the North Dakota Industrial Commission director said the plan was to drill and frack every square mile out here in western North Dakota. Your listeners probably know that fracking is a part of a unconventional process, and it requires millions of gallons of potable water to extract the Bakken oil. But because there's never really been any planning in the Bakken oil field development in North Dakota, no, there's no state, no federal, and no tribal agents that is monitoring or measuring the loss of potable water from oil and gas development in a very arid state like North Dakota, which is also experiencing drought conditions out here in the West at a minimum. And it's only based on estimates by the industry and the North Dakota Industrial Commission. They're estimating that fracking consumes 2 million gallons of potable water for each Bakken well site. And when you multiply this times the number of wells that are currently producing in North Dakota, that's about 8,024 wells, you get an idea of the level of unmonitored industrial consumption of water. At a very minimum, that's about 16 billion, with a B, gallons of potable water used for fracking so far. And this is in a very arid region in the middle that's experiencing a drought. So the drilling and fracking is just starting out here. I think one of the reasons why maybe the public isn't really aware of the volume of potable water being lost is because the government and the industry likes to measure the water loss impacts in terms of acre feet, and few people in the public really understand what an acre foot translates to. The extreme consumption, industrial consumption of this potable water comes at a time when the snow melt into the Missouri River has been declining, and I believe this is due to climate change or global warming, and I've lived in Mandaree most of my life. And over the years, I witnessed the change in shorter winters, less snow, and hotter, drier, and windier summers. So in that regard, on Fort Berthold, we've experienced a high number of prairie fires last year from oil well sites. And we also live in an arid, windy, dry area. So out here, it's a very, very rural area. We need a reliable and permanent source of water out here to fight fires and protect lives. In addition to the high consumption of water by fracking, there's a dramatic increase in population also occurring in western North Dakota brought on by the Bakken oil field development. And this population growth is another new demand on the Missouri River, and it's only going to continue to grow in the years ahead. Our state and federal political leaders seem to think that natural resources, including water, are unlimited in arid country. like where we live out here in western North Dakota. And this kind of thinking allows the industry to consume billions of gallons of potable water for fracking without really accounting for their immediate impacts or potentially long-term impacts. So we need to responsibly conserve water for the next generation to come, and we need to determine what are the actual water resources available today. For us, I think in the United States, this means that the U.S. policy needs to support an energy conversion to a renewable energy opportunities that already exist in this country today. In the United States, 5% of the renewable energy capability exists just in Indian country alone. And North Dakota is also one of the windiest states in the nation, so we could do better, and we need to do better in North Dakota and in the United States. And in North Dakota, especially in western North Dakota, we really need to protect our primary source of drinking water, which is the Missouri River. Right now, we need to address the water quantity issues that are identified in the work report, Gone for Good. And we really do need an impartial study of the current water resources that are available out here in North Dakota.
And when I think about all the roads, the trucks, the noise, the dust, the breakup of habitat, I've got to think that the animals are suffering too.
Oh, yes. You know, I live out in the Mandaree area on Fort Berthold. We're the largest land base here on Fort Berthold. Prior to 2007, we were a very rural and isolated area, and I think we were undeveloped from industrial development, and this was really kind of a habitat sanctuary for animals and endangered species. But I was talking to the tribal fish and game director probably last week, and he said it's hard to find any deer out here because all their habitat is now being invaded by well sites out in the Mandaree area.
And there's a lot of small plants and small animals that we don't even know about, and we should know about it, but I'm presuming that nobody's even looking at that.
You know, that's part of the unplanned development that's going on out here in western North Dakota. There was just a rush for development. The populations had not, you know, were struggling economically. And I guess, you know, people reached for the money that they saw that was going to come, but it was never factored in. What are the unacknowledged costs that we will be bearing in the future from this development? And we still don't. You know, we're seeing them today. I see visible impacts. I'm in the targeted area of development on Fort Berthold, and I see some prairie fires from the open flares of the well sites. These flares go 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and it's a very dry country. I've seen two prairie fires about a mile or two from my house, and they threatened nearby the homes of tribal members that live there. We've had a really big fires last summer. So there's a lot of unplanned impacts that people are now experiencing. There's a lot of emissions coming from the open flaring of this natural gas. They don't, because there was such a rush to develop it, there's not any mechanism to gather that natural resource. And so it just flared into the open air. It's not reinjected into the well. There's no pipeline system here, but pipelines have their own issues also. So, yeah, there's going to be impacts on human health here, and there's a degradation of air quality. And I was at a meeting last week on pipelines, and folks were talking about the loss of quality of life out here in western North Dakota that's being destroyed by this development.
We've built up a picture of Native Americans having a special connection to the land as a sacred place. Do you think that sanctity and relationship is being violated?
I know it's being violated. I think there's in a community within Fort Berthold, there was an attempt to put a oil waste dump site in that community without their knowledge. The effort was to try to get it into the community without any public notice and attempted to avoid public comment that was required for that dump site. However, people got wind of it. They knew something was going on. There was a very big excavation process going on, but nobody could finally, probably about 4 weeks later, people found out it was a oil waste site, and they rose up against it and really put the pressure to stop that site. But there's all kinds of that kinds of activity going on in the state of North Dakota. There's a lot of radioactive fracking waste that's coming out of the Bakken Shale, and that's kind of just come into the becoming visible to the public this year. And now counties are being asked to change their zoning requirements to remove any restrictions on radioactive waste. And small communities are fighting this, but you're fighting a big industry and a complicit government that is getting a lot of revenue from this development. Sadly, the state government, it's like, in the center of North Dakota, and most of the population is in eastern North Dakota. They don't really see or experience the impacts that people that live in western North Dakota are seeing. I feel like it's not a priority to them, but, we don't want to be a dump site in western North Dakota, not on Fort Berthold and not in western North Dakota. We value our land, our connection to our land as tribal members. There's a existing connection with our land that we still articulate in our hearts and in our beliefs. Sadly, our tribal government, the leadership is pretty much pro-development. Some of them have businesses in the industry. So there are some conflicts of interest that exist. That's an issue here on Fort Berthold.
Well, money's the big poison wherever it goes, I think. I'm wondering, this sounds to me, what you're describing, it's almost like another invasion by the white man. Am I going too far to say that?
Oh, no, not at all. When I listen to, I'm a part of the Dakota Resource Council, and I attend the meetings on oil and gas issues and the pipeline meeting last week. And from the way people were talking about the effects they were feeling, I thought, well, they are just now getting a sense of what Indian people felt when the federal government pushed for folks to move out here, and how we as tribal members felt when our lives were impacted significantly. So the impact of invasion is very similar that's going on today, and that's another thing that we're also dealing with here on Fort Berthold.
Do you find that there's some wisdom from the elders that could help us cope with this?
I think what we need to remember is our connection with our land, that our land is really, it's life-giving to us. And we have to protect that relationship with it. That's what's going to save us. I just can't express that enough, that I think sometimes folks get, separated from land. You live in a city, maybe, or you're not a landowner or a home out there in the country. But even the smallest thing, like having a garden, it connects you back with the earth. And I think you need to have your relationship with the earth needs to be alive. It needs to be active. It needs to be giving both ways. And that's really what is going to help keep us alive and keep us in good health with our environment. So we have an obligation to protect our environment. It works for us. It takes care of us. It's life-giving. And so we need to respect that relationship with it.
Thank you so much for saying that. I needed to hear that, too. From Mandaree, North Dakota, we've been talking with activist Theodora Birdbear, a member of the Dakota Resource Council. Theodora, thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith. Try out our library of files at ecoshock.org. They are all free. You can donate if you want to. Thank you to the listeners who tune in each week, taking your chances on what you find, opening your mind. I'm Alex Smith, and I am grateful that you were there. All the musical sounds in today's show are The Desert Dwellers, courtesy of Black Swan Records.